Want consistent color for every job? Mylow's Pro Rewards members get a 20% paint discount on future purchases after paint annual qualifying spend reaches $3,000. Plus, order eligible in-stock paint and paint supplies by 2 p.m. for free same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Improving is easy at Lowe's. Excludes spray paint and mist tints. More exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Subject to change. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Same-day delivery valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. Details at Lowe's.com/same-day-delivery.
Muddy Knees Media.
Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Coming up, you can't touch this. Rangers tell Leeds Ryan's not for sale, and could it be no more Morelos? All things unwell at Motherwell. They are one of three sides without a win so far this season, and we have a full week of fixtures to look back on for the first time since the opening weekend. I'm Andrew Slavin, and not only am I joined by The Telegraph's JJ Bull, but it's a welcome return to my sister from another mister, Tartan Army's finest, Laura Brannan.
Hello, it's good to be back. Properly this time, not just for 10 minutes.
Properly, for the full show.
In JJ, the house.
How are you?
Yes, I am also good. It's nice to be a trio. To complete
wonderful.
The
triangle.
I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's nice. Yes, we are full force.
It's been a long time, hasn't it?
Yes.
It's been quite a while.
Let me kick things off, because five games into the Premiership season so far for most teams, why is nobody scoring a lot of goals? Seems to be a slow start.
It's kind of what we've seen across Europe, actually, in the post-lockdown return to football. So it's a lot slower, but a few reasons. Maybe one's the crowd, and maybe they're not running that little bit extra that maybe some teams were, which causes mistakes in defence. But also, teams just won't be able to press as much just now because they've not been able to work up full match fitness, so they're not able to basically play the way they want to. There's a bit of a lack of match sharpness. You can see it in some of the decision making and passes from certain teams. And some of the managers have talked about it as well. Derek McInnes, Neil Lennon, I think Stephen Gerrard's even spoken about it. They'll take a few games for their teams to get up and rolling. And I think teams like Motherwell, I think especially, will, once they've had a few games under, will pick it up. But another thing is that I think in these crowdless games, a lot of the games depend and they hinge on the technique of individual players.
Mm.
And there are lots of talented players in the Scottish Premiership, but some teams that rely on things like how can it end to the box and going off second balls, they don't have that same roar from the crowd, and maybe that affects it too. But it's the same thing that's happened in Germany and England as well.
I saw we got a tweet, or I got a tweet, I think you were in that as well, JJ. Dr. Grant Campbell, who sent us a few questions before, he said, excluding the St. Johnstone Hibernian game, which is now over, that win for Aberdeen against Livingston on Sunday meant that just over half of the first 26 games in the SPFL season have been won either 1-0 or 2-1 so far this season.
Get it on your coupon.
I think the fans, it might seem daft to suggest like lack of fans can have such an impact, but I think it has. It feels flat, and I think I talked about this last time, but it's just, there's something about, and it's as simple as maybe like when there's a shot on goal and you come close, and maybe it goes out for a corner, gets deflected out, and the crowd normally, that's when they're right behind you and there's a big roar and it fires everyone up and you see the players reacting to each other and shouting, and it doesn't really feel like it's got that same oomph behind it right now. If maybe a attempt is saved, everyone just kind of runs back.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
To start again, whereas normally you get that big surge, and I just feel like that's, when we get that back again, I think there's going to be such a difference, and I think it's going to fire the boys up even more.
But Reynolds was on the TV and he said that as a player, you'd notice that when you come out to this for the start of the game, as obviously there's no like big roar and there's not the same atmosphere. But once you're playing, you kind of forget about it straight away. Yeah, I think definitely I agree with Laura. There'll be bits where you don't get the same swing of momentum that you might get, and you can't be carried by that kind of that feeling you've got in the ground. But I think a lot of players just concentrate on the game.
There's still passion on the field, because we saw that at the end of the St. Johnstone game, but we will talk about that in time. So let's start the show, because we'll be talking about this weekend's results and making sense of them. We'll also be looking ahead to Steve Clark's squad, because he's naming that on Tuesday, and we'll also get the inside track from Easter Road and how they're getting fans safely in ahead of September. But first, we're going to start on the blue side of Glasgow.
This is a Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slavin. Listen to it totally ad-free via The Athletic.
Only half clear, Jack. for Kent. Barisic for Roof! And there is Kemar Roof's first Rangers goal.
Rangers remain top of the table and unbeaten after a 2-0 win over Kilmarnock thanks to goals from new signing Kemar Roof and the much-wanted Ryan Kent.
But the headlines, Kemar Roof.
Is it? Oh, yeah, it is. Because the kit man called him Roof. Two Fs, 1-0.
I like that, yeah.
I did like how somebody said, if what Jimmy Bell calls you, you go by what Jimmy Bell decides that you're going to be called. You don't mess with Jimmy Bell.
Well, despite that mistake, it was really being, the big talk ahead of this game was that Morelos was nowhere to be seen on the team sheet. Steven Gerrard left him out, and he also said it was quite an easy decision. Do we think that's going to be the end of his career at Rangers then?
I feel like we've been asking this question for months and years.
But the fact that he's not in the team now, what does that do to his price tag? Are they going to sell him for less?
No, they just won't sell him. I think they're just trying to make sure that the club has the power, which is probably the right thing to do. His head's been turned, as Gerrard said before. The offer's not come in because there's all that transferness. That's a word. Going on with Jonathan, what's his name? Jonathan something, who went to Lille, because Lille were after him, mind. So that's not happening now. But maybe he wants to get out. He obviously knows he's a good player. But you have to work hard against Steven Gerrard's team. And now he's got the boy Roof, who I thought was really good in this game. And Itin, who
is... Cedric.
Yeah, Cedric. That's a lovely first name, isn't it, for anyone?
See, when we're on a Morella, so that's... unsuccessful Lille bid, right? And it was about the talk of around 16 million. Has he now seen that? And has that gone to his head? Now he's seen a figure. And I know obviously the press have been floating around numbers for months and months on end now, but now that has become almost a kind of factual thing. Is that went to his head and he's kind of, I don't know, like, he's getting
just checked out.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like,
you know, he wants to move, right?
Well, that's the thing. Like, see, in any job, in any profession, if you... Or if you're mentally done with that job, is there any way back for you?
Well, maybe you're right. Maybe he does look at the price tag and go, well, how much do you want for me to go? Because maybe he wants a new challenge. I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's certainly not achieved what he would have wanted to achieve at Rangers. But
not yet, but there's still time. But another one was there, like Ryan Kent was linked to the move away, Leeds. They wanted to put in, I think it was 10 million was meant to be the rumoured bit. He seems to have got better over the summer break. Right, it's summer now. Yeah, he's looking quite sharp and a few lovely turns and touches in this game. He might be coming as important as Gerrard thought he would be.
Well, 3 goals already this season and he got 7 for all of last season.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like Kent is probably one of the most, if not the most valuable player right now for Rangers.
Well, I think Barisic. I think he's brilliant.
Him too.
Well, what did we think of this game against Kilmarnock anyway? Because obviously Roof got things going for them. I think it was Barisic who got the assist as well. And then Ryan Kent also, doubled the advantage. It felt like it was all Rangers in this game because Kilmarnock didn't even get a shot on target and only had 25% possession.
Oh,
is
that
kind of to be expected when you travel to Ibrox?
I think so. You've got Killy are just so lacking in everything. Like they can defend well. We know that's what they can do, but that's not... They're all set up to defend with 2 banks of 4 and then just try and get something out of them, but they've not got enough pace, width. They don't really have anything particularly troubling up front. They like them, lumping that kind of bottom half of the table teams in. But yeah, I mean, that's how lots of teams set up against Rangers. It's the way to do it. Try and block them down, make them slow. That's how who's it drew them? Livingston, was it?
Rangers drew with Livingston, yeah. 0-0.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the same thing. You make it hard for them to break you down and... hopefully you can get something in the break. If not, you get a point, and a point is very, very valuable against Rangers.
But you said about Roof having quite a good game in this. I really enjoyed his movement for the first goal, purely because he kind of read that the ball was going to come. I don't know, it's one of those kind of striker's instincts thing. The ball goes out to Barisic, and he could either flight it in, or he played it across the deck, which he did, and he just decided to move back, and it was the perfect kind of movement for that goal. I think he's going to prove to be a really clever striker for Rangers.
Yeah, I agree. He's really good. Yeah, really good movement. I agree with that. Positioning. It's, I think next level players, they do things off the ball that good players don't do. And Roof is definitely managing to get himself into positions where he could be on the ball. Or like the goal he scored and the header he hit the post, I think, jumped across the defender. Really good movement again. I think I agree. He's going to score some goals. Many.
Well, Kilmarnock take on Dundee United next, which I saw in the last two meetings back in 2015, collated 12 goals. So it could be a goal fest, who knows? But Rangers are going to face Hamilton next weekend, who'll be riding high after their win in the Lancashire Derby. Sorry, Laura.
Mimnot to O'Dolphin. Hamilton take the lead with 5 minutes to go. Hakeem O'Dolphin up from centre-back. Gets his first goal in Scotland and his first goal for Hamilton Accies in the Lanarkshire Derby.
Hamilton 1-0 win over Motherwell, leaving Stephen Robinson's side winless after five matches, whilst the Accies got their first points of the season. It was Hakeem O'Dolphin's 86th minute goal, the difference between these two sides. And the one thing that I think a lot of people have picked up on, and I'll point this to JJ because, Laura, you work for Motherwell. Stephen Robinson said in his post-match interview that somebody at some stage has to step up and score goals,
yeah.
Challenges the players. How many balls does David Turnbull have to put into the box for someone to get on the end of it? So he's saying Turnbull's had a good game, but maybe not everyone else. I keep claiming bad luck. I think that runs out after a while. I'm boring myself with that. And I think he also said along the lines of, if I can't fix things, someone else is going to have to fix it.
But I thought you said, so I read this as him saying, if someone's not going to step up, basically I'm going to have to get someone else in who can. And I think he seems like frustrated that he's not backed financially to bring in a striker that's going to take him to the next level, because that's clearly something they want to have. I don't know if Lauren knows anything about this, but this is the problem with teams like Motherwell just now. They've got all the possession, like dominate games, but are not creating shots from close range to score. And I don't know whether it's a lack of what it is, whether the strikers, I think he questioned their desire to get into the positions to try and like put themselves in dangerous positions as in physically dangerous to their own health, like where it's going to hurt, that kind of thing. I guess you need a striker who's a bit mental, right? And maybe the ones he's got are a bit nice, and that's why Chris Long was the one at Everton, wasn't he, in his youth?
Yeah. I like Chris Long as well.
Me too.
I think he's decent. Hit double figures last season, but... and I think they have brought in a striker as well, Laura.
Yeah, so Callum Langs came in as well. Mm-hmm. And obviously, just in terms of wide players, Jake Casey's came in. And also Tony Watt, who came in at the end of last season, didn't really get a chance, a run of things, obviously, because of what happened. So mm-hmm.
What happened?
Well, with coronavirus.
Oh, of course.
That old thing.
In February, Motherwell had a run of a crazy amount of games, and it was a case of... he didn't really get a chance to come in and really make an impact because it was just fixture after fixture, no real time to kind of bed him in training and really kind of change his shape accordingly around him. And then obviously football shut down. So it kind of feels like he's also one of the kind of newer boys trying to fit into the system. But when you look at it on the face of things, I think a lot of people might look at it saying, oh, they've not really changed the squad that much. But see, when you actually look at the starting 11, a lot has changed from last season. So there's going to be a lot of kind of move around time will take to get this right, because the likes of Callum Lang's obviously coming up top, Jake Case as I mentioned, Tony Watt as well, but there's also guys like Jordan White is so new to things, Ricky Lamy at the back, Stephen O'Donnell at the back, and then you look at boys that have been there before but are now playing regularly. So David Turnbull's back, Trevor Carson's obviously back in the team now because Mark Gillespie's left, and then there's also boys like Sherwin Seedorf, who has probably looked like one of the most promising players in the squad this season and has grown so much compared to his performances last year. I think he's one of the more positives to take from everything that's just kind of clicked right now for him in training. So even when you look at the team from last year, there's so much that you can go, right, there's changes here, and it's going to take a while for that to all kind of bed in.
Definitely. Well, they're really young as well, is one really important point, I think. They've got the, according to Y Scout, they've got the second lowest average age of any team. I think it's team, might be squad, which is relevant because with young players you get inconsistency. Like Lang's just new into the club and he's also 21, like very young, so they're going to get bits like that. And they're definitely one of the teams that we're talking about at the start that are maybe a bit rusty, and they need to get that get themselves right up to speed. And the team below Motherwell, the average age, is Hamilton, actually.
I don't want to sound like I'm making excuses, and that's definitely what I'm doing, but I kind of wanted to raise a point of, and this is for any club really at this time, the restrictions just now because of the COVID protocols and stuff, mm-hmm. a lot of the boys are split between several changing rooms on a daily basis. And it means that if a team like Motherwell, who have got a lot of signings coming in, new boys aren't mixing with each other. and they're not getting to know each other as quickly as they might have. Nobody had a pre-season trip away this year where you'd normally have a week in a hotel together. So it's taken a long time. So for example, and this is just me plucking names out of nowhere right now, but say for example, Tony Watt is in one dressing room and new boy Nathan McGinley is in another one. They might not speak to each other on a friendship level, or just getting to know each other level, and they only know each other really on the training ground. Like
that's
on the
really
bench.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd never even thought of that.
It's things like that, and it's something that our boys at Motherwell have taken into their own hands recently, in the last week or so, where they've went to like the management and said, "Look, we want to get like a games room. We want to get somewhere like a social area."
Because we want the Motherwell version of Soul Bar.
Because obviously, like, that's the thing. Boys aren't even allowed to go out now to go and say, "Oh, let's go for a coffee" or "Let's go and have lunch." Because I'm not allowed to do that anymore, there's nowhere for them to really socialise and hang out. So this will, hopefully, in time, we'll see boys just get to know each other on and off the pitch a bit better.
Maybe, because they still play good football. It's just that missing ingredient of finding the back of the net. But we have to praise Hamilton because, yes. You know, we haven't given them much of a chance this season. But once again, this
you
is
haven't.
The thing they do. They always... Yeah, I haven't, sorry. Sorry, JJ. I don't remember you singing the praises too much.
So they're going to finish 10th.
This is what they do it again. They come up with a result that's totally out of the blue. And also, funnily enough, Hamilton's reserve thumped Motherwell's reserve 6-1 last Monday. And Regan Mimnaugh was on the score sheet for that. And lo and behold, he gets an assist in this game. And it's the youth again, providing all the quality for Hamilton.
Some really good young players in that team. I was also delighted the boy Dauphin, because he missed that. He missed a really good chance inside 6 yards. I think it was from a corner.
From a Mimnaugh cross again.
That's the one, yeah. And he put just white and then to score that. It's his first senior goal he's ever scored.
Yeah,
didn't he look? And I like how then there's no crowd, but he still runs off towards the crowd. It's so funny when players do that. Like, they must grow up as little boys or little girls and boys, and they're going towards a crowd that's not there in their garden. And then they're actually on a full, like a proper pitch doing the same thing. Lovely stuff.
It certainly felt like second half Hamilton were the better team with much of the better chances.
Yeah, I think it was kind of about... Well, the two subs that came on, was it Calum Smith and this boy, Mimnaugh, you're talking about? They came on about, 70 minutes or so, and it felt like the last 15 minutes, it was all Hamilton. And up until then, it was Motherwell were dominating, and it was a case of when rather than if they were going to score. And then for that last 15 minutes, it just completely changed. The two of them coming on made such a difference.
Well, it's going to be much harder for Hamilton in their next game because they play Rangers. We'll look forward to that one. Motherwell are also in Europa League action, Laura. You must be looking forward to this because they face Glentoran.
Of Europe.
Which is also, I think, is that close to home for Carson? Goalkeeper?
So it's actually quite interesting that he was talking about this recently. His granddad used to play for them. So he's got kind of family connections there. And as a result, I think his grandma's like always been a big fan, and he's kind of talking about the connection between the clubs. So it's kind of a shame that his granddad won't be able to come over and actually see the game, which is what he would always have. He'd always kind of come over for the Motherwell games whenever Trevor was playing. Considering the connection there, it's a bit of a shame.
Two matches down, four to go. We're going to chat St Mirren's draw with Ross County next.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven. Listen to it totally ad-free via The Athletic.
Stewart racing onto that slack ball, and he's been absolutely melted by Joe Shaughnessy.
That's how Jamie Lyle called Joe Shaughnessy's red card on Sports Scene as St Mirren and Ross County drew 1-0. There was also another great commentary line from Lyle when he said, I think Ross Stewart had clearly beat Richard Tate to the ball in the air, and it just went over the bar or whatever, but he said, Ross Stewart has Tate on toast. Which I thought was funny.
That's one of those footballisms. I think Michael Owen started that, the having someone on toast. I'm sure he started that in Champions League, yeah. He started saying things like, because there's things like send them for a hot dog, which I assume comes from America. But having their own toast.
Oh my God.
Tate on toast is good though, alliteration, I agree.
I do like that.
I was sure St Mirren would win this at 1-0. And if they hadn't had Joe Shaughnessy sent off for that, I mean, what the hell was he doing?
I don't even know why. I don't know why Jim Goodwin defended him, really. He obviously had. He admitted he hadn't seen it.
He's right behind it when it happens. It's like in line with the dugout.
But maybe just saw, because it was a 50-50. You've got to go in, and he likes players that go in hard, and Shaughnessy's gone in full-blooded, but also with full attack mode, and he's lucky they didn't send the guy into outer space.
It's knee height. It's knee height. Anything that's straight knee leg. Height is dangerous. Yeah. It's an absolute straight red card. I'm sure he said he would, if he saw it and he disagreed with himself afterwards, he would say so next weekend, which I don't know why you would ask him about it. Nobody needs to know that he's got that.
It's old news, mate. Yeah, it's done.
Exactly. But in terms of the full match, Ross County must be quite disappointed, because after that red card, they get the equaliser, but they don't find a winner. But that just goes to show how good St Mirren are defensively.
I think Ross County should be disappointed with this, to be honest. They've started off very strongly. They're proving to be a very difficult team this season. They're third in the table.
It's very early to be looking at the table.
I get that. It's very early days. But for Ross County to be up there at this stage is brilliant for them. If I was a Ross County fan, I would be feeling frustrated to be playing against a team like St Mirren, who are equal, I'd say, roughly. You'd expect them to be at least a match for them in most games. But when they're up against 10 men, they should be taking all the points there.
There's a lot of teams that are kind of equal, though, isn't it? It's part of the problem. Well, not the problem, it's what makes the league quite interesting, is you can never really tell what's going on. My boy Obika, again, on the score sheet.
Boy.
He's a tidy player. I do like Obika. I know he's not the best player in the entire league, by some margin.
But, I hovered over putting him in my fantasy team as well, so when I heard the goal go in, I was like, oh!
Well, Richard Tate has done so well since he's gone to St Mirren, that on Who Scored, I think he's the fifth highest rated or highest performing player in the league.
But did you see his goal line clearance?
Oh, it was brilliant.
I mean, only has he scored a diving header in this season so far, he defends like that. And he's like, what? And he's 30s. He shouldn't be able to stretch 30, like that.
I think after the first game of the season, I joked with you because you were like, oh, I've got Richard Tate in my fantasy. And I was saying, yeah, but that's his one goal of the season. So you've peaked with the points there. But that goal line clearance was brilliant from him.
I'm going to point out good signing for St Mirren came in this week. A guy called Christian Dennis from Notts County. He's a good striker. I think he could do all right at this level. I think in the last four seasons, he's scored about 50 goals.
What league? Was he National League, was he?
Yeah, he was National League last season, but he was League 2 for about 3 years. The season with Notts County when they did get relegated, but he did hit double figures. And at Chesterfield as well, where he scored almost 20 goals, I think, that season. And he also had a good year at Macclesfield. So his goals ratio is really good over the last 5 years.
What sort of player is he?
He's a bit of a poacher, but he's got good movement. He'll be a fox in the box. That's what I would say.
So him and I think Obika up front, what do you think?
I think he'll be the main partner for Obika, because I think Junior Moraes has had a good chance already this season, and he's, you know, hitting a barn door. So who knows? I would play Dennis. Once he's match fit, I would play Dennis and Obika for sure. It would be interesting. I do think St Mirren, Goodwin's put a good St Mirren team together there. But next for both of these sides, St Mirren are up to St Johnstone and Ross County travel to Livingston.
Brown leads it off to Christie, tries his luck again, denied once more. It's another good save. Might break down to Edward, back again, and it has found its way in. Albion Ayeti, on his Scottish Premiership debut, breaks the hearts of Dundee United.
Off to Dundee now, but we're going to talk Dundee United, because there's no Sky Sports mistakes on this show. New signing Albion Ayeti scored the only goal in Celtic's victory over newcomers Dundee United in Celtic's first league fixture for 13 days. But it took them a while. Dundee United are some workhorse of a side these days. We've spoken about it before, but it took until the 83rd minute for the deadlock to be broken. And I think they were unlucky not to get something from this game. Does anyone disagree with me?
I'm really impressed with Dundee United this season. They're really, really well coached. You can see it in, especially in transition to defensive transition when they get back into shape, like we've mentioned a couple of times so far. I think Jamie Robson's been doing really well on the left. I think Reynolds, we know about Reynolds from what he used to do when he was at Aberdeen, like a solid defender, like really reliable, leads well. But Connolly just looked desperate to keep everything out of the net. Like when the goal finally went in, he fell to earth like, no! If you watch the replay, you see him like start, like, you know, in Smash Brothers when Donkey Kong does that like smash with both hands, that's what Connolly does as he goes to ground. He's so annoyed at that goal going in, because he'd put so much into stopping it, and it's the one time they lost their man.
And also, you have to, any time you play Celtic, Rangers, Aberdeen, or, well, maybe not Aberdeen, but you need a good performance from your goalkeeper. And Benjamin Sigrist seems to be a good addition. This is a guy who was also playing really National League not too long ago, but I read that he won the World Cup for Switzerland under 17s. So he's only, you know, and he's been the deputy to the Swiss international goalkeeper, who is, I can't remember the name.
Jan Sommer?
No, not Jan Sommer. But it doesn't matter. He had a great game.
I think he was very good. I had this game on as I was working, because it was just after our game finished yesterday. So I was working away on my edits, but it was on the side, and it just felt like it was Sigrist save after save. And he was just doing so well. But I think in general, Dundee United, they've looked very well set up this season. I feel like the effort and the work rate has been increased as well. They've definitely shown their Premiership quality once again. And I think it's always kind of a good sign when you lose to a team like Celtic or Rangers and you feel very frustrated by it, and in the way of, we should have got a draw there. I think that's a really good sign for them, and for the fans to come away, and I've kind of seen a few of them talking about how they were so proud of their team and they felt they did so well, and it's just a frustration rather than an anger, and I think that's a really good sign for them.
Do you know where else to see the coaching come in? Is it's really controlled, I think you call it like controlled aggression, and the way they press. So I mean, they're not going to press Celtic high all the time, because that's kind of inviting, you know, them to cut through you with passes. But as soon as the ball would go into an area that they had shown it to, as in like you can block the middle of the pitch and show it wide, then they double up there so that the player has to go back. And everything about it is obviously been coached and is meant to be there. And everything we've said, they just look desperate to defend very well. And if they're building the foundation of this team on not conceding goals, that's probably the right thing to do in this league.
I really enjoyed Sports Scene's analysis of United and how they...
Sean Maloney's great, isn't he?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And we said before we started recording the podcast, he talks like a coach. It's almost like he's teaching you, which is really interesting. But how
I try
they
and
defend
do that.
From the front,
he's good.
Yeah, but credit to Stephen Frail, really, because I've known Mickey Mellon for quite a long time, not personally, but I've followed his career for a while, and he's very much a man manager. In terms of a coach, I think that he must lay that down to that. The credit has to go to Stephen Frail, his assistant, who he brought in. I think he was in Ireland before he came back over to Scotland. So it must be a thing of his where he's just got a good defensive mind. And I think they both played together back in England. But there you go. There you go. One thing for Celtic fans they should pay attention to, but they'll already know, is that Champions League duty this week. Ferencváros are the champions of Hungary, and they're also nicknamed the Green Eagles. There you go. Bit of info for you. But just Sunday's fixtures to go now in a review of the weekend.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media and The Athletic.
Here's Hedges, wonderful move, Scott Wright with a chance, and the finish. That's a lovely goal from Aberdeen.
The first of Sunday's fixtures saw the McCrory derby, as Aberdeen back up their midweek win over St Johnstone with another win, this time over Livingston, thanks to a penalty from Lewis Ferguson and a pretty good goal from substitute Scott Wright. It was a bit of squeaky bum time though at the end when Scott Pittman scored for Livingston, but the Dons were able to see this one out. JJ, you watched this one. I didn't see it, so tell me what happened.
The first half is exactly the same as most Aberdeen games have been recently, where people cannot string passes together. I'm not sure they managed to string more than four in a row. Jeez. And as a result, is that I tweeted a heat map. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll see it. Pretty shocking for an elite level Premiership team. And then people have obviously gone on about McInnes this, McInnes that. I mean, I don't know how much of it needs to be coached and how much players need to take responsibility. But in the second half, changed things around a little bit. And they came out just with more aggression. They pushed up a bit higher. The defensive line was a bit higher. We're managing to stay patient on the ball, a bit of composure. Like things that you can't really coach composure on the training ground. Once you go to the pitch, when you're in the in-game situation, you can't really coach it, right? It's just that how you react. So these players need to step up. And but the funny thing was, you had like Andrew Constein on co-coms basically disagreeing with every decision that McInnes was
on
making.
Red TV.
Yeah, on Red TV. Scott Wright was playing really well. He was playing in that 10 role, which is it's kind of like what Paulett used to do, actually. So you're not, rather than being a Raquel May passer, you run with the ball. And that made a lot of the difference. Livy were having to defend an awful lot of the time. There's an ice cream van here now. Do you want ice cream? Wait for this.
99, please.
Stops. Yeah, 99.
With hundreds of thousands, obviously.
Yeah. What was I saying? Livy were... They're okay. They didn't really offer too much. They had some good chances at the end, but I think that's because... Like, the thing I was saying about Constein is that McInnes took right off and started putting on more... Ojo, Afonso Ojo came on, who I think he's passed forward once in this entire season. I think he's just trying to make him like Ryan Jack Mark II, but I'll wait and see before I start slagging him off.
They brought in the new guy, Marley Watkins.
Yeah, he did okay.
How did he get on?
Fine, he's holding up the ball well. He almost scored at the end. He did okay. He looked quite fit, like he's got a lot of stamina. I think the thing with Aberdeen, right, is no matter how bad they play, McInnes has put players together just know how to get over the line. And that's 3 points. So from what looked like a pretty bad start of the season, that's already, 6 points, is it, out of 3 games? 2 to play. One's against Celtic, so that's going to be a loss anyway. Livy just, like, I think we predicted this at the start of the season. Livy aren't doing as well as last season. I'm not really sure what the huge difference is, other than just they don't have Lawless and now Dykes. What a difference
well,
like, two
that,
players
that, and they normally start seasons well. So this is a bit... They've obviously had this transfer saga over Dykes, and that's now over. I think he scored and got 2 assists in a friendly this week as well. I just don't know what's going to happen to Livingston. I know they've brought in Anthony Stokes, who's back in Scottish football, but I don't know if that's going to be a great signing, because I think he's 32. He's been out of the UK for quite a while. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe they're just bringing back Celtic players
out of the UK,
like Effie Ambrose.
What was it? Ran League he was playing on. Is that right?
Ran. He was a tractor boy.
Yeah,
he was a tractor boy.
One of the famous tractor boys.
He's
yeah,
come back. I don't know. I think a lot of Stokes' issue is his mentality. I think if he is switched on, then that makes a big difference to his ability and his performances. But see if he's not mentally on it. If he's not up for it. It's almost like he comes across as a lazy player.
Well, they've brought in this other lad, Lars Lokoch. I might be pronouncing that name very wrong.
I like it.
But Gary Holt seems to think he's going to be similar to Dykes. Says he has similar properties.
Is a striker, is tall.
Yeah,
pretty all much. Of the boxes. Aberdeen's got
but anyone who doesn't know
well.
Is that we had Laura Brannan on regularly in season one, and anytime we talked about Aberdeen, Laura used to absolutely trash Aberdeen. And watching Laura's face on Zoom while JJ talked about Aberdeen was quite enjoyable. But anyway, Aberdeen are in Europa League action on Thursday. They play NSI Runavik of the Faroe Islands, who won only their third European tie in 27 games because they beat Barry Town. And I'm gutted that Aberdeen won't play Barry Town, because there's not going to be many mentions of Barry Town on this programme. But it should be an easy one, eh, JJ?
No, they'll find a way to make it hard. It'll be brutal to watch, and they'll maybe find a way to win. It'll be like a team full of postmen and whatever else. Not there's anything wrong with teachers.
Postmen.
If you're a postman, please keep listening. But yeah, I'm sure... just pass the ball, keep it on the ground. Like, it's easy, anyway.
Final match of the weekend, and it was a bit of a yawn fest, let's be honest. But those of you who watched the full 90 minutes were rewarded at the end, because St Johnstone gave away a penalty and Stevie Mallin smashed it home like he normally does. And it meant that 3 points went home to Hibs. But should it have been a point apiece? Because there was a moment in the first half where St Johnstone put it in the back of the net. Callum Hendry header ruled for offside. Have you guys seen this?
Yes, and he was onside. So
well onside.
But it didn't count. So
so that's the end of the matter.
What you gonna do?
Well, it does opens the area of like, why don't we have VAR? We know why we don't have VAR. We don't have the money for it.
Yeah,
but it was
what we do have though,
one.
Is an easy way to replay that little clip and then work out immediately that it was. It doesn't. Yeah, I know it's kind of stupid. We'll be here forever. We have VAR in Scotland. However, I don't know if it was a total yawn fest. I thought it was just two teams kind of cancelling each other out.
I know we talked about this earlier. In terms of like the kind of the slow start to the season and the lack of goals and everything, but it's actually kind of a shame, because this is a time when I think fans from other countries will be watching Scottish football, considering we're in season and, like, for example, England aren't.
Yeah, what a chance.
It's kind of a shame that the last kind of 4 games have had one goal, if any, And it's maybe kind of going to leave them with the impression of, well, it's a bit of a crap league, and we're kind of up here going, no, it's not. Honestly, it'll get better, and we're actually really good all the time. But it's just been really unlucky, the games that have been televised.
Yeah, I still think, though, that Scotland's got... It's great. Football's football. If you enjoy football, you'll still enjoy the product up in Scotland.
Exactly. You introduced this one as saying they only got reward for watching it because of the goal, but I like more than the goals.
Oh, of course. I mean, yeah, I just mean I'm taking it from a perspective of somebody who doesn't quite like understand Scottish football, and they might just kind of look at it from there saying, oh, yeah, it was nothing each again, oh, that's boring. Whereas we're all like, no, this is awesome.
There's more to it, I think, than if you watch like League One or the Championship or something like that in England. I don't know. I think it's a lot more entertaining, as I'm sure you do. But yeah, I mean, the games they've picked have been the ones that have kind of, I just don't put St Johnstone on live games.
Plus, bear in mind also that very early on, Sky will want to be going to as many grounds as possible to appease as many clubs as possible. So you get that out of the way so that
before they just camp
January,
at Celtic Park.
And then in January, just focus on a title race, you would hope. But anyway, the end to this game was pretty emphatic because penalty to Hibernian. I have an issue with this penalty. I think there might have been a foul ahead of the penalty foul. And it was Gogic holding Tansa. And he misses the header.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the box. I don't know.
I know what you mean.
I don't know. See what you think. Do you agree?
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I was going to say that I think Gogic is... been like I thought he would be. Such a great signing for Hibs. He's been really, really, really good for them for various reasons. That, I mean, he's just a good player and does defensive things well. No Nisbet in this game. He had a hamstring injury of sorts, apparently. So maybe he'll be back at some point later. That's my news on Nisbet. That's that section of the show.
Nisbet news.
What did you make of Liam Craig getting a second booking at the end, though?
I've not seen that bit. What happened there?
So he got booked initially during the game, obviously. But that was
for the penalty.
Yeah, so it was him that actually gave the penalty away.
No, it wasn't. It was Gordon.
Oh, so he was initially complaining away. About right. Okay, so he was complaining about the penalty being given, but at full time after the whistle had gone, he's went up to the referee to ask for an explanation, obviously. And by the looks of it, I don't think he got what he wanted from the referee. So he's went to go to the assistant to ask him for an opinion, for an explanation. And as he's went away towards the linesman, the ref has decided to book him a second time. Because he's just went, nah, I've had enough of this. Too much
I don't
to say.
Think he was asking
we're ending
for
this here.
I think it was more telling.
Yeah. So, yeah, he got sent off at the end. But my complaint is more with this, and I think I've said it for years, but I think it's more with the rule. I don't like the fact that you can book people out with the white lines and out with the 90 minutes.
I don't know
about that, but your conduct on the pitch should always be monitored. And if you're out of order... I think it's absolutely fine.
I know, but it's after the game's finished. It's quite normal for a player to go up to a referee at full time and go, well, what was the reason for this? Because they're never going to go down to their office at their dressing room after a game and get an explanation, so they're going to have to ask.
Well, I think what's more damning is that Liam Craig's the chairman of the PFA. So, you know, someone who sets standards should also set the standard on the pitch as well. And as much as... The thing I do like about this is that we've talked about not having any fans in the ground. Still shows the passion to win a game of football. There's no love lost there. There's no loss of passion on the pitch, I think.
Yeah, players are right into it.
I kind of enjoyed it. Still to come, we're going to talk about Hibs and about how they're going to get fans back to Easter Road safely. We'll also predict Steve Clarke's very good Scotland team. He's a very good manager. And we'll also squeeze in a bit of fantasy football as well.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven. Listen to it totally ad-free via The Athletic.
So Tuesday's the day that international football comes back and Steve Clarke is naming his squad. They have matches coming up against Israel and the Czech Republic in the Nations League. That's if they beat Israel. So how many left-backs, how many holding midfielders can a squad have? JJ or Laura, you can kick us off. Whoever speaks first, who's definitely going to be in the squad?
I don't think there's going to be many changes, to be honest. You can obviously look at the argument that the English leagues haven't been playing for the last couple of weeks. And this is essentially almost like a pre-season friendly for some of the boys. But when you break it down, there's not many that you would say aren't important. You're not going to leave it at the likes of Andy Robertson just because he's had a few weeks off. But obviously, I think a lot of the Scottish boys are obviously going to be included. I don't think there's going to be many changes at all. If you want examples of deafness, Mikey Devlin was in the last squad. I don't think he's going to maybe make it this time just because...
Can't even get a game for Aberdeen.
Everything's kind of been happening up there.
they should avoid players with coronavirus. That's one of the things they should not do. He doesn't have coronavirus just for legal reasons, by the way.
And then you look at, obviously, like, so Shanklin's not going to be in it. He's not fit. And then there's the whole Stephen Naismith Hearts debacle that is obviously, I think, going to keep him out just based on the fact that he's not played for half a year.
Well, the problems will be that a lot of the English teams are on their holidays, like you were saying, so there's a lot of players that I'd imagine clubs don't want to release or who just literally aren't ready to go in. Like, I can see Andy Robertson not being in the team. I mean, I might be proved completely wrong. But Liverpool...
You think Andy Robertson won't be in the team?
So you don't think we're going to...
I can see
captain?
Liverpool finding a reason... Liverpool will find a reason to not have their captain who needs a break to
go
and...
He's just had a break. He's on a break right now.
They just played loads of games and then want to be there for pre-season. I think Robertson wants to play, but I think, as we've seen in the past...
He's got international matches and he's the captain of our country.
Yes, but like...
Yeah, I agree with Laura. I know you're saying, JJ, they might
They've done
find
it before.
A reason, but I'll be absolutely aghast if Andy Robertson's not in the...
Yeah,
in
and if he also doesn't fight that as well, if Liverpool don't want to win.
The other thing is that Liverpool are playing Arsenal, right? They won the cup in the Community Shield.
That's a good point, actually.
So they're in their pre-season. It's just, I'm not saying that Andy Robertson doesn't want to go up or that whatever. It's just that football clubs in the past have found it awfully easy to not let their players go... To international matches when it doesn't suit the club. Even I think even then it might happen. It doesn't really matter anyway.
Like, I mean, no, I'm sorry, we've got enough to prepare for. These are two very important games to build up to our massive playoffs.
You know, it's not me not calling him up, right? You're talking to me as though I'm doing it.
Yeah, you're winding me up already.
this is when we remember that Laura Brannan is a Scotland fan rather than a club football fan.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I think we know David Marshall's probably going to be in goal.
Oh, great, we're safe then.
Yeah, well,
we've got no strikers and no keepers. That's the problem.
Yeah, we have Marshall's no strikers. Right. It's really quite scary looking at the strike force.
We've got loads of midfielders, loads of left backs.
You know James Forrest is going to play, probably, because he's been playing regularly for Celtic. Ryan Fraser should play, hopefully, but he's one of those players that, you know, hasn't really played much. And yeah, Naismith, the midfield is an interesting one for me because that's our strongest area. It's just whether or not Clark can play the team that he wants to play. If he plays the team that he wants to play, we've beaten Israel with that squad basically already. Here's hoping. But what about Lyndon Dykes? This is a story that's been bubbling all through the summer. Do we think that he's going to be called up?
Is Lyndon Dykes going to get called up to the Scotland squad, or is Lyndon Dykes, has he decided he's Scottish yet, I think is the bigger question. I'm sorry, he has been talking to many, many people about whether he wants a call-up or not, and I don't think you should have to convince anyone who's in their 20s that he's a certain nationality. If he doesn't know by now he's Scottish, then he shouldn't be getting considered.
Is this based on rumour, or have you actually heard something?
Or xenophobia?
No, I've just seen the quotes recently about, I've spoke to such and such, I spoke to these people, and it feels like he's had conversations left, right and centre. Now, obviously, he might have decided weeks ago that, yes, those conversations were productive and he wants to play for Scotland, but why is it still a question? Why has he not just come out and said, yes, I'm Scottish, I want to play for Scotland, if that is so be it the case?
Well, because he's probably, he grew up in Australia, he was born there, right?
And so he's Australian? Maybe
he identifies as Australian. It depends often where you grow up. And then
his mummy and daddy are from Scotland.
Exactly. Yeah, so he probably said he was Scottish when he was growing up, because that's one thing that a lot of people do. They say what their parents' nationality is. And I think the overall point in this is that he's not actually that good. So I don't know if it really matters anyway.
Like, thank you, JJ. Thank you.
He's all right in the Premiership.
I mean, yeah, we have a lot of striker issues right now, but is he necessarily the answer? I don't know. He did cause a lot of problems for teams when he played in the Premiership. That's been past tense now. But international level, I don't know. It kind of brings in the same arguments we had with Shankland. Yes, he's very good in the league that he played in, but is he good on an international stage is a very different question.
Well, the problem Scotland have had for years now is just an absolute out-and-out goal scorer. It's not that Lyndon Dykes is
that's
a
not our only
footballer.
Problem for years
it's an
and
out and
years
out goal scorer. We don't have Lyndon Dykes is not an out and out goal scorer. Lauren Shankland is, but yeah, you're right to call out the fact that he played in the Scottish Championship.
Yeah.
He's yet to prove himself in the Premiership, yet to prove himself in the internet.
Slavo, I don't know if we even need a goal scorer. It's that often what we needed is we play that 4-5-1 and then you need someone in up front to just chase the ball in the channels and lead the press. It's why Kenny Miller did so well for so many years. Just someone like that, someone a bit daft, someone with a bit of pace. I don't think they have to be the goal scorer.
Yeah, I mean, even when somewhere. You look at the squad as well, there's nobody there that I would really kind of go, I don't want Ollie McBurnie up front. I don't think he's good enough. Obviously,
he's playing a two, McBurnie, for sure.
Yeah, there's not many choices. You've got Johnny Russell, who's playing regularly just now. He played in the MLS tournament during the summer. He's now playing back in league business. He's not quite your out-and-out striker, though. I would look at the team and go, I'd actually put Christie up front. There's also
That's what I've been saying for a long time, yeah. Like a false nine kind of bit. Honestly, Scott McKenna up front, hit the ball long, no one can get near him, turn it around.
I think as everyone could probably tell, we have no idea what kind of squad we're going to be looking at on Tuesday. Disappointment for John Souter, though. He suffered a relapse of his Achilles injury. That doesn't look too good for
They're
him.
They're bad injuries to have, by the way, those ones.
Yeah,
Dates
for your diaries, Friday the 4th and Monday the 7th of September is when we see what Scotland are going to be made of. Time to chat the odds with Lee Price. Lee, since Rangers' solid start to the season, has their price to win the league come in?
Well, obviously Rangers started the season as second favourites to win the league, and despite their good start to the campaign, that's where they remain. Their odds have shortened slightly from opening at 2-1 to now being priced at 7-5, but it's Celtic that remain odds-on favourites at 4-7, and whisper it, that's probably quite good value too. Both teams are hugely odds-on to win this week. Rangers 1-7 to beat Hamilton, Celtic 1-9 at home to Motherwell, so we expect them to be neck and neck for some time yet, at least until after Rangers next go to Dubai.
Can you get me the odds on both Motherwell and Aberdeen to make it through their Europa League qualifiers?
I've been stitched up here. Whether it's trying to pronounce Aberdeen's opponents, I'm going to go for Runevic, or saying the odds, which are slightly extraordinary. Aberdeen and Motherwell are both odds on to qualify. No surprises there. But here are the actual numbers. Aberdeen to qualify are 1-25. Motherwell 1-16. That could be famous last words.
And we'll finish on what the odds are on Celtic, Hibs and Dundee all to win next weekend.
Yeah, three form-ish teams. Celtic, as I mentioned earlier, hugely odds on to beat Motherwell. They're not going to offer you value here. Hibs, though, might. They are 13-10 to beat Aberdeen and retain their place at the top of the table and give us a free horse race, at least for now, in the title race. Dundee United away at Kilmarnock, they're 12-5 to win that one. Add those three games together and you get just under 8-1, which could actually be value after all.
Thanks, Lee. Please gamble responsibly. And when the fun stops, stop. This week, Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, announced that fans would be allowed back into stadia from September, and Scotland erupted in jubilation. So what does this look like, and how will you be safe going back to support your club? Well, to help us answer those questions and any worries you might have as a fan returning, we're speaking to the operations manager at Easter Road, Colin Miller.
Hi, Colin. I'm going to start off. It's great news. We're going to be getting back into stadiums soon. Is this something you've been planning on for some time?
Yeah, I think we've all been playing a bit of a guessing game to see kind of when it would happen. It's obviously kind of largely out of our control. There's been an awful lot of work that went into getting Scottish football back up and running again, obviously behind closed doors where we are at the moment. But I think everyone's desperate to have fans back in at the stadium. So great news last week, and it really pushes us kind of into gear for the next step.
Colin, what are the actual stumbling blocks that you guys have to deal with in planning for the fans to come back in?
If we think about our kind of behind closed doors game, first of all, there's been so much preparation. You're effectively redesigning the whole match day experience for everyone. Things you take for granted, like, you know, where they come in, where people go to the toilet, all those kind of things need to be completely rethought and redesigned. So for a behind closed doors game, we're talking about 250, 300 people, which has been a challenge in itself. So now introducing supporters into the mix, you know, whether that's 500 or 1,000 initially, I think the big challenge is your seating deck is probably a relatively straightforward one. The areas that probably cause a lot of stress are getting people into the ground, getting people away from the ground, and kind of pinch points at half time and whatnot as well. we're probably spending far too much time thinking about toilets that than any of us would like, but it's those kind of stress points, you know, trying to avoid queues and whatnot. It's probably causing an awful lot of kind of thought time. And, you know, we put an awful lot of work into having a perfect plan and trying to second guess how people behave. And then you open the doors and people always behave a little bit differently than what you expect. So you're always going to be playing a bit of a learning game as well.
Colin, I'm going to pull you up for the toilet question that we're all wanting to ask. For me personally, when I go to football games, going to the toilet is quite a straightforward experience because there's not really many queues in the girls compared to the guys. But how are the guys' toilets going to get around this? Because seeing everyday society, the hygiene's not the best, is it, in guys' toilets?
I'll have you know the hygiene at Easter Road is second to none. our stadium is spotless. It's a significant challenge, I guess, and you see it in other sports where supporters kind of come and go throughout the game. You know, I think in football and, I guess, Scottish football, certainly where we are, there's that intensity that you don't want to miss a minute of the action. So you very rarely have people kind of coming and going. It all gets condensed down into that 10-15 minute spell at half-time, where everyone tries to squeeze in, going to the toilet, going for a cigarette and going to the kiosk for a pie and a bottle. So it is a significant challenge, and our concourse is, you know, obviously varying size. So there's some that we probably have plenty of space to socially distance a queue, but for others we're a lot tighter. So we're probably going to have a steward on the door to get people in and out. We're probably fortunate in the sense that ours are all weighed out as a one-way system. So they're coming in and out at different points. But I know, you know, we probably feel quite fortunate that Easter Road is a relatively modern stadium. We've got a reasonable amount of space, and so some of the kind of physical challenges that need to be overcome, we maybe don't have to the same extent as some of the other grounds that we're all certainly familiar with. But no, it's going to be a bit of a challenge. I can't imagine somebody being a bit like a head teacher and telling people where to stand and when they can and can't go to the toilet, but it might need to get to that.
What sort of checks and protocols and stuff do you have for people to get in the stadium and bits like that?
Yeah, so for our current status with the behind closed doors game, we've got a kind of overarching operations plan, which is about 100 odd pages long. And we've got a dozen or so other kind of match day guides for all the different stakeholders that try and talk them through the match day experience for their own point of view. And everyone has their own kind of way of that. So I anticipate a very frantic few weeks trying to rewrite all of those, I guess, for this new scenario. And, you know, things always change by the day and by the week as well. So we're kind of constantly reviewing them. With every game that we've had, we've had two home league matches and a friendly match as well. So we've taken a lot of learnings from each of those. So, yeah, I'm expecting another 100-long-page document telling fans exactly what to do and what not to do. But communication is going to be such an important part of it. It's going to be a very different experience for everyone. And I think it's trying to understand what people are logically going to do and going to want to do and trying to build controls into that that keep people safe. But knowing that you can't ask supporters to do ridiculous things that they're never going to do, that seems a bit pointless, and we don't want to overly sanitise, I guess, that environment either.
Colin, this might be a very simplistic way to look at things, but I see it as the main issues are the entry and exits of fans getting in and out, which obviously I think you'll obviously be thinking of things like the fire exits, the big gates rather than turnstiles and things like that. I think obviously you've touched the toilets been another issue. But see, apart from that, is there many other issues if all fans were to just be in the stadium wearing masks? Because we're obviously all going to supermarkets and we're going to shopping centres and things, and the only restriction is really wearing masks. So is that going to alleviate a lot of the stumbling blocks?
I guess your behaviour is probably a bit different first and foremost. I've never lost a rag in the supermarket quite the same way as I've lost it on the terracing. I think, and I'm not a medical expert by any manner of means, but having people in the same place for a prolonged spell of time is, I think, driving it. So what we're trying to do is, I guess, find a point where all your controls allow you to be comfortable with the risk that you're taking on. So face covering is one, hand sanitization is another, social distancing, temperature checks, we're probably expecting to have to temperature check everyone that comes in as well. So you're looking at a kind of range of control measures that allow you to have the comfort that what you're doing is safe and reasonable. And again, been dictated a lot by Scottish Government and their tolerance for what they're allowed, their headroom, I think, as they refer to it quite often, as to what they feel comfortable with doing. I mean, it was only a number of months ago that people were barely allowed out of their house and people felt very uncomfortable stepping over their doorstep. So I think a big part of this is taking supporters and everyone along with us. So I'm sure a lot of supporters are desperate to get back out there, but there'll be a lot that will be anxious as well and maybe a little bit apprehensive about finding themselves in a very kind of crowded and just an atmosphere or an environment that they've not found themselves in for a number of months. So we want to make sure that we have the confidence of everyone, be it our supporters or kind of wider stakeholders, that what we're doing is safe and everyone can go away happy.
Well, best of luck in September. Hope it all goes really successfully.
Aye, fingers crossed. You and me both.
Colin Miller, Operations Manager at Easter Road. So just before we end, I've got a quick little bit of time for Fantasy Football Scotland. Aberdeen are scoring again. Considine's going to be back, JJ. Is it time to get Considine back and to back Aberdeen?
Don't put any Aberdeen attackers in your team. Don't do it.
Well, you said you liked Lucas Scott, right?
Yeah, but Aberdeen players, the best ones to get in are either the goalkeeper or defenders, I think clean sheets. Yeah. Basically, you can bet on Aberdeen to win 1-0 every single week, I would say. Because it seems to be, it's very Italian style of play. They get the ball and then just, they get the goal, sorry, and then just try and defend it. Constantly back will probably come in at left back. I mean, the other one you could look at, if you are looking at Aberdeen players, is whoever's taking the penalties. And it looks like Lewis Ferguson might be that man, because they tend to get penalties, and that's how they get the 1-0 wins. So,
what about you, Laura? What are you looking at ahead of next week?
So I've just put in Ross Stewart into my team. He replaced Lyndon Dykes for me at the weekend. A wee bit disappointing for Saturday's result, but I think he's going to do something for me in the long run.
He's a good player, Ross Stewart. I really like him.
Yeah, I think...
I'm going to stump for Regan Mimnaw, just purely because he's cheap. 2.8, and it looks like he was taking all of their set pieces. So if he gets a decent run in the team, if he's taking corners, free kicks and whatnot, could possibly get some assists. But Hamilton don't tend to score many goals, but could be worth a wee go.
I stupidly left my Celtic players on the bench this week and forgot to bring them in.
Who was that?
I've got Frimpong and Cal McGregor. So that was annoying.
Oh dear. Well, I brought in Jonathan Abika, who got me 6 points. And I also vice captain Barisic as well, so I got 15 points off of him. Right. Superb. But that's it for today's show. We've got to finish it. Loads covered. So thanks for sticking with us all the way to the end. And we'll be back next week to look at the final round of fixtures before the first international break. Thanks, JJ. Thanks for coming back, Laura.
There she is.
Having me back.
And thanks to the Little Kicks as well for their wonderful tones. To get yourself an Athletic free 30-day trial and be able to listen to this podcast ad-free and odds-free, then go to theathletic.com/Scottish show. I'm going to jump on a plane now. I'll see you in Scotland.
Yay!
Or maybe London, JJ.
Yes.
Bye!
Bye! Bye.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta, and be sure to check out our website, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Muddy Knees Media.